Psoriasis is a chronic autoimmune condition that appears on the skin. The immune system sends out faulty signals that speed up the growth cycle of skin. Genes are thought to be partially responsible for the predisposition to psoriasis, which can appear anywhere on the body. Depending on the site of the rash, the treatment may differ. Psoriasis is the commonest autoimmune disease in the United States, affecting over 7 million Americans. What causes it? What treatments are best? Are allergies involved? The answer to these questions and more coming right up. And on today's show, we'll have a healthy recipe from Go Healthy's Kitchen. So stay tuned. Go Healthy for Good starts right now. Welcome to Go Healthy for Good. I'm Dr. Nerida and I'm glad you've joined me today. Go Healthy for Good is live tonight and on your screen every Monday to Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. So like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at Go Healthy Live. And if you want to watch a previous episode or find all of our recipes, then go to our website, hopetv.org/gohealthy. Psoriasis can leave people feeling self-conscious, embarrassed, helpless, and with increased thoughts of suicide. Women are more affected than men because, well, they're more sensitive to the appearance of psoriasis on their skin. Before we start this conversation, though, let's take a look at this very moving video.
One of my most painful experiences with having psoriasis would definitely have to be being bullied. I was constantly asked about what was on my skin. I was told I looked like a burn victim. I was asked if I was beat up, I was made fun of, I was laughed at behind my back, and all because, you know, people just didn't understand actually what was on my skin. Some of the common misconceptions of psoriasis are that it's contagious. A lot of people face public discrimination if they have visible patches, especially children, when, you know, their educators or their peers don't understand what the rash might be on their body. Public pools are a big one. You know, little kids that are going to pools have a lot of embarrassment to face and a lot of shame because they have dots all over them and they don't know how to explain them to their friends.
Joining us today is Dr. Lawrence Green, board-certified dermatologist and skin surgeon, member of the National Psoriasis Foundation Board of Trustees and Scientific Advisory Committee. Dr. Green practices at aesthetics, skin care, dermatological surgery in Rockville, Maryland. Welcome, Dr. Green.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Dr. Nerida.
Now tell us, how common is psoriasis?
Psoriasis is pretty common. Actually, as a dermatologist, it's one of the most common skin diseases we see. I think over 7 million people in the United States are estimated to have psoriasis, and it's also prevalent worldwide.
Are those numbers increasing? Are they pretty steady? What's happening to them?
Well, the numbers seem to be pretty steady, but it's increasing as our population increases, obviously. And it's, when you think about it, it's the most common autoimmune disease in the United States. Not that many people realize that, but psoriasis, first of all, is an autoimmune disease, and
right.
It's fairly common. And it can manifest itself from just small amounts of psoriasis on the skin, just like, say, your elbows and your knees.
Mm.
Or it can be on like 80 to 90% of your body, which is a much more serious condition and much more serious case.
Right. And, you know, it can be so unsightly. What's actually happening in the skin? And we've got an image that might help you.
You know, it's interesting. For years and years, we thought psoriasis was just a skin disease. And it manifested itself in the skin only. And we've learned over the last 15, 20 years, it's really systemic autoimmune disease like diabetes or lupus and many other conditions like that that we see, doctors see every day.
Mm.
You can see a picture of someone with psoriasis on the back of their neck, and you see that the skin is thick and pink and scaly. And that means what happens in that person, when you see that, their immune system underneath is sort of revved up. That's why we call it an autoimmune disease. Your immune system is revved up, not just in the skin below, but it can be, the more severe the psoriasis is, it can be revved up throughout the body.
Wow.
And that's why people with more severe psoriasis are thought to be more predisposed to certain other conditions like heart disease
we'll
or things
come
with chronic,
to that.
Okay, yeah. Chronic inflammation.
Let's have a look at what a tiny skin sample might look like magnified, and tell us what's happening in the actual skin itself.
Okay, that's a great picture that you have there of the skin, and I don't want to bore people with all the details of the pathology of the skin, but basically normal skin is not so thick and doesn't have blood vessels that are so wide or long, I should say. See how long those blood vessels are under the skin, and see how that top layer, very top skin, is sort of mounded. And that's the scale of the psoriasis. And what happens is that the immune system cells coming from inside the body infiltrate into the skin through those blood vessels, and the body creates longer blood vessels to make it so that those immune system cells can flow in there, and it tells the skin to reproduce itself real quick. And the skin is reproducing itself so quick that you get that mound of scale on the top that you guys saw in the slide.
And why does it not just slough off like our skin cells normally do?
Well, skin cells usually slough off much more slowly than we see in psoriasis. In psoriasis, they slough off every few days because there's so much skin cells being produced. Normally, it takes a few weeks for the skin cells to slough off because our skin is not, our immune system is not revved up to produce all those skin cells, which are producing way too fast.
So it's like the body's rejecting those skin cells and they're just building
up. Yeah, well, the body's just, the immune system in our body is sort of telling, it's all the inflammatory cells, all these immune system cells are just telling the skin cells to make more of themselves. It's not rejecting, it's just producing too much. It's sort of an overcharged immune system.
Right. And so the skin cells are... So what does it feel like? What are the symptoms of psoriasis? What does it feel like under those plaques?
Well, psoriasis sometimes can have no symptoms, but most commonly it does itch. And people who have psoriasis in certain areas, it's very itchy and very uncomfortable.
Any other symptoms? Does the skin crack? Does it...
If the skin... That's a very good point, you know, you bring up. If the skin does get really scaly, like you saw that picture of the person with the back of the neck, and it can feel, it can actually hurt besides that. Not only can it itch, it can hurt because the skin is cracked and dry. Mm. And we have ways to help alleviate that when I talk to people with psoriasis. But it can hurt and it can be painful at times. It's true.
Right. Now, psoriasis is on the skin, but there is an arthritis that's associated with psoriasis too. Tell us a little bit about that. Yes. I know that you're not a rheumatologist.
Right. So it's interesting. Psoriasis is classically thought of as being a skin and a joint condition. And me as a dermatologist is going to take care of the skin. And if you have severe joint disease, you're going to go see a rheumatologist who specializes in what's called psoriatic arthritis.
Right.
Basically what the arthritis is, it's the same thing that's going on in the skin, but it goes on in the joints. So you get that immune system inflammation, remember we saw that caused the skin to build up and build up. All those immune cells are flowing into the joints and they have that increased blood supply like you saw. And so the joints get very swollen, they can be very painful. Now it's a small subset of people's psoriasis have psoriatic arthritis. It's probably somewhere between 10% and 30%. And usually people develop the psoriasis first. That precedes the development of the psoriatic arthritis.
Okay. If they have mild skin symptoms, are they less at risk of arthritis, or is everybody across the board at equal risk?
That's a great question. Pretty much everyone across the board is at risk, but I wouldn't say it's equal. Mm. It seems to me that the more severe disease that you have, the more likely you're going to have severe psoriatic arthritis. And actually, if you think about it, it makes sense, because if you have immune system inflammation going on in large parts of your skin, it's more likely going to affect other parts of the body, including the joints.
Okay. Now, what are the symptoms for the arthritis?
Well, the main symptoms of arthritis, and I'll give you on a very general basis, are joint swollen inflammation. Usually it's what we call asymmetric, so it's not like on both first fingers or both knees. It'll be one knee or one hip. And classically, people with psoriatic arthritis have trouble getting up after sitting in a chair like this for a while, or getting up out of bed. It's what we call stiffness in the morning, stiffness, or stiffness after driving their car for a long period of time, or not using their joints if it's in their fingers.
And is it important to recognize that and treat it early so that damage doesn't go on?
Yes, also a very good question. Because in the skin turns over, and of course, you know, it can lead to spreading of the psoriasis on the skin, but in the joints, if you don't treat the psoriatic arthritis and it spreads, you can actually get destruction of the joint beyond what we can do to repair it. So it is very important to try and treat the psoriatic arthritis if you have it early so that you can prevent permanent destruction of your joint.
So for a viewer who might notice some of that scaly skin on themselves, they haven't had a diagnosis, but they get joint aches. It's really important to see a doctor, isn't it?
Yes, and I would recommend starting with a dermatologist first to get the correct diagnosis of psoriasis. And if the dermatologist really thinks it's worthwhile to see this, the rheumatologist because he or she is suspicious of this person having psoriatic arthritis, by all means, you should be going.
Great. Well, coming up next, we'll have a delicious and refreshing salad for you. You don't want to miss it. We'll be back after a short break.
I remember I would sit in the therapist's office and she would say, you have the drug history of a 40-year-old woman. And I'm sitting there, 18 years old, thinking, I don't have a problem because I'm not legal to drink.
And I could not stop. I think I was 36 grand upside down at that time into credit lines when I ran out of money because I was using that much cocaine.
I was not a happy drunk. I was a mean drunk.
I always had to have a needle by my bed, and if I didn't, I'd be terrified.
One is not enough, so then you go to two. Two is not enough because you see, you become addicted.
I just wanted to be happy.
How did I get here? This is not the person my mother raised me to be.
Something seriously drastic had to change. And that's when the Lord stepped in.
Yeah, that gave me a flash.
Welcome back.
I'm in the kitchen with Phil. And Phil, what are you making? This looks beautiful.
This is going to be a quinoa citrus salad.
Oh, sounds great.
And that, it is. It's one thing. I mean, I love quinoa and it tastes good and it's a healthy food. But I love when you add citrus to something because it just kind of gives it a punch in taste.
Oh, yeah, very much. And quinoa just lends itself to salads. It's such a versatile grain. Lovely, soft and fluffy. So what goes into this?
Basically, we have our quinoa. We're going to add some shallots. And we've got some mint as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to go into our quinoa. But then we're going to make a dressing for it.
Ah.
And the dressing is the fun part because it has cashews, it has lime juice, it has orange juice, it has olive oil, and a little bit of salt to taste.
Wow.
And then we've even got some citrus. If that's not enough, we've got some citrus that we're going to cut up and put on top of it.
Oh, sounds great. So what can I start doing to help you?
Well, what I'm going to have you do is start shelling our blood orange.
Oh.
And the blood orange is going to give just a rich color.
Great.
And what we've already done is we've already cooked the quinoa, which is basically a cup of quinoa and 2 cups of water.
Mmm.
Cook it until it's fluffy. So we've got that taken care of. And I'm going to start with our dressing.
All right.
And I just love that color.
Yeah, look at it. It's amazing, isn't it? It's like beetroot. It's so red.
So for this dressing, we're going to put in our olive oil.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to put in a little bit of our shallots. We're going to put in just about a sprinkle of our cashews because we want it to be thick enough, but we don't want it to be too thick.
Right. Yeah, because that lovely monounsaturated fats, and they blend up to a really nice cream, don't they?
They do. I'm going to add our lime juice as well.
Yum.
And then if I could have you cut this,
we're
going to get some juice from that and put that into our dressing.
All right, and for this, I'd better take the seeds out if you're going to squeeze it so that we don't get that bitter taste that can make turn a dressing into something pretty... unsavory. They get really bitter, don't they?
They do.
Now, do you need both halves? Just one half?
Normally, we'd use both halves.
Mm-hmm.
And we can use both halves in this case.
All right. Well, I think we are... Oh, they're hiding. There you go. We've de-seeded. And I presume you wanted this blood orange without any of the pith so you don't get that bitter flavour into the salad.
That's exactly right.
Although that's got lovely bioflavonoids in.
So.
And so if you were wanting to, if you had a cold, you'd eat this bit.
And I guess that while you're cooking, you could just stuff that into your mouth as a snack.
Yes you could.
So we basically included all of our ingredients into here. And
right.
We're going to blend it and liquefy it.
Okay.
Okay. And once that's all done, we've got that taken care of. Now we've pre-made it here. We put a little bit of the juice of the blood orange on here. And this is what it becomes after we've liquefied it. Now for our quinoa salad, we want to be careful not to do too much. So we're going to put a little bit of it in here.
So like just a couple of tablespoons of that dressing for one person serving?
That's exactly right. This is one serving. We're going to put a little bit of our shallots in here. And I'm going to put a little bit of our mint in here. And I love the flavor that mint gives with citrus.
Yeah. Nice. Very nice.
So once we've got this, we're going to mix it all together. This is our quinoa salad. This is the dressing. And you just want to mix it until it's evenly mixed and stirred up.
Now, so do you want me to cut these small now then?
You can cut them small. We'll put them on top.
All right.
And we've also pre-cut over here. We've got some other citrus fruits as
well. Oh, what have you got there?
We've got some orange pieces. We've got some tangerine. And we've got one of my favorites, which is the pink grapefruit.
That's something that America grows so nicely.
We've done it
wherever else I've lived, there's nothing like a Florida grapefruit.
It's sweet
and nice.
My grandparents used to live in Florida, and they had a tree in their yard.
Oh.
And it was terrific because every day we could go out as much as we wanted. It was right there.
I bet you never got coughs and colds. So then you'd stir that all in?
Well, you can stir it in, or you can just put it on top. I like to put it on top because then I can just, like I said, citrus can be a punch, and I like that. So we basically have that. We've plated it over here, and this is our quinoa salad.
That looks beautiful. With the
fruit on top.
Thank you.
And because I love these blood oranges, I'm going to take a piece with that.
You've grabbed a piece. It's got a really nice kick. But it's actually surprisingly mellow because of the cashews.
And it's interesting because you're right. You would think that it might be too much. But the cashews tones it down a little bit.
That I could go back for the whole plate. You really need to try this. This is so unusual. Now, while we eat this, let's watch the special video.
When I was going through my severe bout of psoriasis, it definitely changed me as a person. I wasn't very pleasant to be around, therefore definitely caused a lot of my relationships to struggle as a result. I lived by myself at the time. I did not want to leave my house. I was severely depressed. I had a boyfriend, but I didn't want to be intimate with him. I didn't even want to look at myself in the mirror, let alone have someone else look at me. So it was really difficult for me to deal with maintaining any type of self-esteem when I had severe psoriasis.
That's quite debilitating, isn't it? Now joining us is Dr. Nadia Rora, a board-certified naturopath whose focus is on dermatology. Dr. Rora practices at Naturopathic Living in Washington, D.C. Welcome.
Thank you.
Now tell us, why does the body see the skin as something it needs to fight and send immune cells out against it?
This is probably something that happens with every autoimmune process. The immune cells stop recognizing body as self and they start attacking it. And many different things can provoke it. We don't know what exactly provokes such a response in each situation, but it could be stress, it could be infection, it could be different chemicals, but with psoriasis, it's similarly. Immune system stops recognizing the body's own cells and starts attacking them.
Now, what are the triggers, Dr. Green, that might cause this to start happening?
You know, Nadia mentioned she did a great job, but as she mentioned, we really don't know what triggers psoriasis. There's certainly a genetic predisposition. So one of the first things we ask as dermatologists is, do you have a family history of psoriasis? So it seems that psoriasis, when it comes to family history, there's a focus of abnormalities in a certain chromosome that is also seen in people who have other autoimmune diseases like psoriasis, diabetes, Crohn's disease. So it's all in sort of seems to be in the same area. We really don't know the details, but when it comes to genetics and family history, it does seem, there definitely does seem to be a link between psoriasis and some of these other autoimmune diseases, because we've linked problems in the same chromosome, and it's this part of chromosome 6 in the body. Mm-hmm. Now, triggers that might cause it, why some people, you know, get it at certain times of their life, as opposed to another time, even if you have the genetic predisposition, we don't know. Mm. You know, Nadia mentioned stress and trauma to the skin, or maybe infection, and we really don't know. But actually, there is one type of psoriasis called guttate psoriasis. It's a small subset of psoriasis we usually see, where people get lots of little, teeny places of psoriasis on their body that is classically attributed to occurring after an infection, like strep throat. Now, okay. But we don't know why it happens that when you're 16 as opposed to 25. We really don't know, but there is a genetic predisposition for all psoriasis, it seems, and triggers, like Nadia mentioned, that we really don't know that started.
May I add about guttate psoriasis specifically?
Yes, sure.
It happens, as mentioned, after the strep infection. Mm. And it appears that immune cells are confusing the strep cell markers that are on the surface of the cells with the markers that are normally displayed on the skin cells. So there seems to be this lingering strep infection that maybe some particles of strep infiltrate somewhere in the skin, and then the immune system continues to try to eradicate the strep, but in the process starts mounting an immune response against the skin. Mm. And so we have this specific kind of psoriasis.
All right. As a naturopath, do you work on the basis that there are triggers to psoriasis?
I do, and that's pretty much my approach to every autoimmune condition. Not only what, but also why. Mm-hmm. I try to find out what is the cause of this. And there are many different types of psoriasis, so they can be caused by different triggers.
What are common triggers that you find?
I do see a lot of children with psoriasis, and in this population, it appears to be related to gluten sensitivity and casein sensitivity. Not necessarily wheat allergy, but the actual gluten intolerance. And
so do you mean celiac disease? Or
not necessarily.
Celiac?
We do know that celiac disease is autoimmune disease, and it is associated with psoriasis. Probably 20% of the cases of psoriasis have some celiac disease elements in them. But in children, I don't necessarily see celiac disease. I do find the non-celiac gluten intolerance. And that appears to be the gluten probably is, maybe molecularly, it is similar probably to something that is in the skin tissues that triggers the immune system to start reacting against skin. And also, we know now that those autoantibodies that are made by immune system against gluten, for some reason, they have affinity for skin. They like to reside in skin. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's where the processes are happening. So
right.
In many cases, it's psoriasis in such cases is called a celiac disease of the skin.
Okay, so you're talking gluten and casein. Larry, you mentioned that one of the risk factors is a family history of psoriasis. Are there any other risk factors that can set people up for psoriasis?
No, we really don't know. Mm. That's a great question. And I wish I could give you a more full answer about other risk factors. You know, people will tell me that their psoriasis often started for the first time after trauma. But again, why did it happen after trauma when they were 12 instead of trauma when they were 18? We really don't know.
What kind of trauma?
Oh, a cut in the skin, an accident, a bruise, a fall.
Wow.
The skin, yeah. The trauma is one of the triggers of psoriasis, but let me step back. It's really not a trigger so much as if the situation is right and the body is ready, it can bring it on.
Okay.
Sort of the same thing with strep throat.
Right. So it's kind of a,
right.
Not a really strong association, but it's there.
It's there. You'd have to have the predisposition. Your body, it has to be primed to let it happen. And though that, what does that? We don't know. Mm. I wish I could give you a better answer.
Now, you've both mentioned that other autoimmune diseases are associated with this. So did you mention the diabetes, Larry, and...
Well, it's autoimmune-like diabetes. I don't know if there's more patients who have diabetes than have psoriasis and then diabetes alone, but there is an association between people with psoriasis and some of the bowel autoimmune diseases like Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. It does seem to be some overlap between those conditions and people with, who have psoriasis. They're more common in each other's among each other.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, coming up next, we'll take a look at some practical options for psoriasis. But first, let's take a look at today's medical news report. In the headlines today, sugary drinks go with pizza and fries, psoriasis linked to diabetes, and sleep deficit impacts weight gain and our genes. Children who drink sugar-sweetened beverages consume more calories and eat more unhealthy foods than other children. The study published in the Journal of Preventive Medicine recently includes children aged 2 to 18 who were involved in national surveys between 2003 and 2010. During this time, kids' consumption of food and sugar-sweetened drinks increased and they drank fewer non-sweetened drinks. So parents, encourage your kids to drink water rather than sweetened drinks. Then you'll be empowering them to make good dietary choices too. The risk of diabetes is increased by at least 50% in people with psoriasis. A large Danish study has followed 50,000 patients with psoriasis for 13 years and found that the risk of diabetes was increased 50% in those with mild disease and more than doubled in those with severe psoriasis. In previous studies, it's been suggested that psoriasis is a risk factor for cardiovascular disease, but perhaps diabetes is really the culprit. So, if you have psoriasis, you might consider dealing with your other risk factors for diabetes and be sure to have regular diabetes screening. Lack of sleep and plenty of readily available food can lead to unexpected weight gain. People who slept 5 hours or less each night during a work week and had unlimited access to food gained almost 2 pounds in a week. Researchers say that insufficient sleep leads people to eat more than they actually need. In another sleep study, people were restricted to less than 6 hours a night for 1 week, followed by a week of 8.5 hours sleep each night. There were observable changes in more than 700 genes, many becoming less active. The evidence is clear. Get plenty of sleep so you can replenish damaged cells and tissues, and so you can make the best choices every day. I'm Dr. Narita McKibben, and that's today's medical news report.
I remember I would sit in the therapist's office and she would say, you have the drug history of a 40-year-old woman.
I could not stop. I think I was 36 grand upside down at that time into credit lines when I ran out of money because I was using that much cocaine.
I was not a happy drunk. I was a mean drunk. Something seriously drastic had to change. And that's when the Lord stepped in.
Circumstances may separate friends. The restless waters of the wide sea may roll between us and them. But no circumstances, no distance can separate us from the Savior. Wherever we may be, He is at our right hand to support, maintain, uphold, and cheer. Greater than the love of a mother for her child is Christ's love for His redeemed. It is our privilege to rest in His love, to say, I will trust Him, for He gave His life for me.
Welcome back to Go Healthy for Good. Now, we're going to pretend that Priscilla here has some psoriasis on her arm. We're going to look at some of the treatments that you both use in treating psoriasis. Now, let's begin with, what should we use for soap? Nadia, what should we use for soap? Any particular soap? Or I'll just open up to both of you.
I guess I prefer no soap.
Okay.
That's because it soaps usually dry skin further, and I find that especially children, are already in a lot of discomfort. So if we do use soap, that those are usually the Cetaphil soap that are really mild.
Okay.
Or calendula baby soap, okay. That there are different variants of that.
Okay.
But it's quite soothing.
Right. What do you recommend?
Well, you know, I think Nadia brought up a good point about soaps. You know, one thing you don't want to do with any soap you use is scrub the skin.
Mm.
I don't mind when people use soap, but scrubbing the skin is sort of a trauma on the skin and actually can worsen psoriasis because psoriasis is worsened by trauma. So you just want to gently use soap and gently bathe your body.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's very important, as Nadia alluded to also, because, you know, soap can dry you out and you want to make sure you have a moisturizing soap, is that you want to put on moisturizer when you get out of the shower. That's the best and most important time to moisturize, because moisturizing will help keep the scale, which we saw those mounds on that drawing, from building up. So moisturizing is very, very important.
So this is a moisturizing soap. So you might use a liquid soap like that that's got a moisturizing oil in it. So would you use a lotion like this?
Well, after you get out of the shower, that's
yeah.
a great question. You want to use a moisturizer. This is not what you want to use.
Okay.
And we can use this as a nice example of what you don't want to do. So my suggestion to people is that you get a moisturizer in a jar and never in a bottle.
Because
moisturizers in jars are usually creams and ointments. We want heavier, right, better choice.
Something like that.
Something like that. Because you want something to lock in the moisture in your skin. You don't want it to evaporate when you get out of the shower, so your mm. skin actually gets drier and the scales will start to build up. So you want something occlusive, something that's going to be thick. This is one of my favorites. I brought in a little sample because I use it myself all the time.
Oh.
But it's a more petrolatum-based product. A lot of people may not like it because it's greasy,
mm-hmm.
but it is great at locking in that moisture so the scale won't build up.
So this is called?
It's called Aquaphor.
Aquaphor.
Yes, dermatologist's best friend, if you want to look at it that way.
So it's kind of a Vaseline-based.
It's a Vaseline-based product, and there's nothing wrong with using Vaseline, that said.
Okay.
I had an old professor years ago who asked his patients to put on Crisco oil, which I wouldn't recommend. But that said, if you want to talk about cooking in a show, as we did a cooking segment earlier, you can talk about Crisco oil. But something nice and greasy, though, is the bottom line, something very important.
So this is going to be something that creates quite a barrier on the skin. And
right.
you might put it on like that?
You want to put it all over the psoriasis spots.
All right.
Yeah, to
make sure
we can cover
up. We're going to pretend that you've got a psoriasis just here. All right, so there's a good start. Aquaphor. What would you recommend, Nadia, once you're out of the shower and you're wanting to moisturize that flaky, scaly skin?
Well, again, the best friend of a naturopath is calendula.
So
all
we got
of the
you some
different
here.
Kinds of calendula preparations, they make them in salves, which I find working great for specifically psoriasis plaques, because it's very occlusive.
So it's
it similar. Keeps the moisture in.
It's going to be similar to the Vaseline. When you say the salve, it's got
it would
that
be kind of calendula Vaseline.
Greasy type mm-hmm. of thing rather than
yes.
a lotion, which is more
exactly.
water-based. Okay.
Exactly.
So you'd go for a calendula salve, and that would be a good place to start. All right. Now, yes, Larry.
One thing you want to consider when you're treating psoriasis is it's always important to moisturize for everybody. But if you have a lot of psoriasis plaques, I wouldn't recommend using prescription products on a lot of psoriasis plaques. One, it's too cumbersome, labor-intensive, take away too much of your time. And two, it can actually be very dangerous to use medications and topical prescription medications on large portions of your body surface.
Mm.
So if someone has a lot of psoriasis on their body, please moisturize with Aquaphor or calendula, something really occlusive.
Mm.
But see your dermatologist, because you would need something more than just a cream. You would need what we call systemic therapy.
Okay. We'll come to that.
Yes.
Now, two things that you might see over the counter for psoriasis are salicylic acid.
Yes.
And coal tar.
Correct.
Do you use those much? Obviously, you would be prescribing stronger
medicines.
Than
yeah,
these.
But these are common for people with mild psoriasis who go things and want to buy things without a prescription. Coal tar is over 100 years old, and there are multiple ingredients in there. And we don't know exactly which of those ingredients help psoriasis, but it does seem to slow down psoriasis. But it's messy. It can stain things. And salicylic acid is just an exfoliant. So it's a gentle exfoliant. What it does is, if you have a lot of scale on the skin, I mean, I prefer to put on something like the Aquaphor to occlude it and make it go away that way. But you can exfoliate first with the salicylic acid, then put the Aquaphor on top. So it'll help descale the skin. Because you have that thick scale. You think if you have psoriasis like that, the picture of the neck we saw, no medicine's going to get in there if you have a lot of scale on top. So you want to get that scale off. I like doing it in the shower, not rubbing it, but, you know, the body will just descale it naturally. But if you need a little extra help, that's when the salicylic acid comes in.
All right. Now, if we put salicylic acid on, would we also want to put a cover on it and occlude it with some foam, you certainly
can do that. You can occlude medications with foam, with the Saran wrap or something like that.
Okay.
But I think you can also occlude it with something like Aquaphor or Vaseline.
Really?
Once you rub the salicylic acid.
So just like this, and then you might, let's say if you're going to bed, whoops, let's see if we can get this apart. And then you might cover the actual lesion and just keep that Aquaphor in so it's not going to come off on the
right, the salicylic acid, the Aquaphor. And actually, even prescription medication creams work better with occlusion on there. But again, don't do that without your dermatologist's advice. I mean, that's not something you want to start doing on your own.
All right. And then let's talk about the systemic things. What might you be talking about? We've got some. Nadia, you mentioned that you give your patients some systemic things. Tell us about these.
Right. So vitamin D is a very important element in skin health because it is known to control the regeneration of cells and also it controls the reproduction of the skin cells. So there appears to be a little bit of that mechanism breakdown in psoriasis. So vitamin D has been shown to be quite successful in treating it both systemically and topically. I think just adding a little bit to the topical treatments, there is a prescription cream, which is the vitamin D analog. It's called Cipotrine cream, which I think comes under in this country is under the brand name Dovonex, but it does help a lot with thinning the plaques and just reducing the itching and inflammation. But as far as systemic treatment with the vitamin D, definitely levels have to be measured to make sure that there is no deficiency, this helps.
Right, and vitamin D is also really important for the immune system because it works on toll-like receptors and can really help modulate the immune system too. Tell us about quercetin.
Quercetin is anti-inflammatory bioflavonoid, and it helps significantly with itching and discomfort. And it works very well. It works similarly to prednisone without side effects. So I use that quite extensively for patients with psoriasis.
Excellent. Okay, so 500 milligrams twice a day.
That's pretty much the dosage.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for that. And we'll come back and talk about some more of the systemic things. Now, in just a moment, I'm going to answer some of your questions. But first, let's enjoy another Ageless Advantage.
Our cells love antioxidants. Antioxidants protect our cells against damage. An excellent source of antioxidants are fruits and vegetables. Fruits and veggies are high in vitamins A, C, and E, all great antioxidants. A 2011 Korean study found that vegetarians consumed approximately 2 times more antioxidant vitamins than their meat-eating counterparts. An antioxidant-rich vegetarian diet is another ageless advantage.
Welcome back. I'm glad you were here to share that special moment. Now, have you missed a previous episode or you want to download one of our recipes? Then visit our website at hopetv.org/gohealthy. And we're also on iTunes, so check out our podcast there. Do you have a question on psoriasis? Then call us right now. I've got two wonderful guests. They're on 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. And they're ready to answer your questions. Now, I want to thank you for posting your comments and your questions on our Facebook page. And here are some questions that we haven't had a chance to answer yet. Gloria posted, I love your show, tried and tested recipes and the workouts with Sean. Love your personality. It's a great show. Well, thanks, Gloria. Patsy posted on Facebook, I have a dear and winsome granddaughter, 1 year old. She has another cold in less than 8 weeks, oh dear. I feel so bad that she gets so stuffy when she refuses to eat. How can I speed up the unblocking of her sinuses? Well, normal saline drops can be helpful. Make sure they're not cold, just keep them warmish and just drop them in her nostrils and that will help to do it. Also, a warm half bath, just sit her in a warm bath with all her favourite toys and try and get it as warm as she can stand. That will actually take a lot of the congestion out of her head and her sinuses, and that will be a real nice recipe for getting her to sleep or to eat. And then rub some Vicks on her chest, and that will also be helpful. Now, one caller asked, does fish oil affect brain function? Yes, it does. Some fish, not all fish, some fish are high in omega-3 fats. Those omega-3 fats are good for cognitive function. One problem with using fish for accessing omega-3s is that they also have mercury. There's not a fish on the planet now that does not have some mercury in. The higher your intake of fish, the higher your personal mercury level. Once you get over a certain level, you actually lose cognitive function some. And so there's a bit of a balance there. What I would advise is to seek your omega-3 fats through plant sources like flaxseed oil and chia seeds. They're great ways to get the omega-3s without the mercury. Now, Paul from Florida called and asked, what's the best advice to recover after a workout? Paul, I would say be sure that you have drunk plenty of water the day that you're working out. And if you're working out hard for long periods of time, up to an hour and a half, you shouldn't need electrolytes, but you definitely need plenty of water. After you've had your workout, think about having some carbohydrates and maybe some protein. It depends how much protein you're getting in your diet. If you're tend to be on a high fruits and vegetable diet, you might need to supplement with a little protein. But if you're having the standard American diet, you're getting plenty of protein. But just be aware to eat within half an hour of that workout. And have a rest day between your hard workouts. That's really important for muscle recovery. Well, I want to thank you for sending your questions and your comments. Keep them coming. Don't forget to call us now with your question about psoriasis. That's 855-400-HEALTHY, 855-400-4325. Now, before we continue our discussion on psoriasis, let's take a look at this video. Bon appetit. Celery is a winter crop with a mild, aromatic taste. It's perfect for soups, stews, stir-fries, and works really well with onions and carrots. Compared to other vegetables, celery has a really high content of sodium. But in a cup of celery, there's only 90 milligrams. In the grand scale of things, that's not a lot, because each day you can have 1,500, 1,700 milligrams of sodium. Many people use celery sticks as part of their weight loss strategy. A whole cup of chopped celery only contains 20 calories. You know, celery can keep in the fridge for up to 7 weeks. If you don't keep it wrapped, it can wilt. But don't throw it away. Set it in some ice-cold water, and pretty soon it'll be standing up, crunchy and crisp. Now, if you keep it in the fridge, these inner leaves will actually start to grow. Now that's what I call live food. Bon appetit. Now, remember to call us with your question about psoriasis. The number's 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. Now, let's go back to those systemic treatments that you were mentioning, Larry. What other things do you give? We had the quercetin, the vitamin D from Nadia. What do you give?
Well, if someone has psoriasis on more than, say, 8 to 10% of their body surface, dermatologists usually use what we call systemic treatments. And in creams are just, like I mentioned, not practical, and not too cumbersome, and also actually way too expensive. It doesn't make sense anymore. So what we do is we give therapies by mouth, injections, or in the doctor's office, in the dermatologist's office, to help control the psoriasis. The oldest of those therapies is ultraviolet light therapy. And it's something dermatologists have been doing for probably almost 100 years. Mm. And ultraviolet light therapy slows down the immune system. And because it's only shining on the skin, it slows down the immune system, especially on skin cells afflicted with psoriasis. So it slows down the immune system in the skin, and that can feed back to the immune system in the body. So that works for people who have psoriasis on usually 8 to 15% of their body surface, not a whole lot, because it's they have a lot more psoriasis than that. The ultraviolet therapy is less less practical and doesn't work as well. And we only use a very narrow part of the ultraviolet spectrum because we want to save people from getting things like skin cancer, which can happen with ultraviolet light exposure. Mm-hmm. Now, other treatments include, the newer treatments include something called biologic therapy, and that's a fancy name for injections that have been developed over the last 15 years that actually slow down the immune system component where psoriasis is affected. So they're sort of targeted magic bullets that find the part of the psoriasis that's where the immune system is being overextended and overworking and slow it down. And they control the psoriasis. Unfortunately, they don't cure it, but they control the psoriasis for a time period, and then you have to give yourself another injection, and it keeps it under control. And these work fantastic. We can clear people who have psoriasis on more than 10% of their body to up to 100% of their body for their whole lives by taking medications like these.
Wow. How often would the injections be needed, typically?
Well, it really depends on the medicine. We have medicines that need to be injected once a week, once every other week, or once every 3 months. Mm-hmm. And newer medicines are coming on the market in the next few years that currently are experimental that may even have less frequent injections. So we're getting better and better at this targeted magic bullet therapy for psoriasis.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it really is changing. And there's people with psoriasis really... There's no reason to worry about and suffer through psoriasis. Please see your dermatologist and treat it, because you can really help yourself.
Now, Nadia, psoriasis is associated with some other health conditions. What are they? Let's run through them.
It is associated with other autoimmune conditions. And we see that if immune system has been set off for overreacting, once it can affect any system and it can... affect any area of the body. So with psoriasis, celiac disease is common, Crohn's disease is common, ulcerative colitis, all of those other autoimmune conditions. Also Hashimoto's thyroiditis, quite commonly observed with that. So I would say autoimmunity in general. Mm-hmm. So if there is one autoimmunity somewhere, there would be more.
Mm. Now you were mentioning some others too, Larry.
Therapies for psoriasis?
No, the other health conditions be associated with psoriasis.
You know, yeah, it's true. I mentioned that it seems that on a certain part of chromosome, one of the chromosomes in our body, a lot of the autoimmune conditions seem to occur and they overlap. And if you may not have, say, you don't have Crohn's disease and psoriasis, say you don't have them both together, but someone else in your family may have them, we're finding. So the family history goes along with problems in those chromosomes, and that's where you're finding them related too. So if, say, you have psoriasis, someone in your family may have Crohn's disease, and so on.
Right. And what about the cardiovascular risks? Is that true, or is that just...
That's a great point to bring up, because more and more we are finding that when people have something like psoriasis, which involves not just the skin, it involves inflammation occurring throughout the body. And one of the ways that it's shown is in the heart. Scientists have learned that when you have chronic inflammation in the heart, it's one of the main causes of blockage of arteries in the heart, and you can have heart attacks. People with psoriasis, especially more severe psoriasis, because again, the more severe, the more immune system inflammation you have, you know, in the body, and the more chronic inflammation you have, the more likely you are to have a heart attack. And people with psoriasis we're finding are more likely also to be maybe overweight or suffer from things like what's called metabolic syndrome, which can lead to diabetes.
Right.
Again, because of the effects of chronic inflammation. So not treating your psoriasis, especially when it's bad, really can harm you. You know, people worry about some of the medicines being dangerous, and I look at it a very different way. Not treating severe psoriasis is much more dangerous a condition.
Right, and you're talking about shortening your life, actually.
Correct.
Yeah. Well, don't forget to call us. The number's 855-400-HEALTHY. We want to hear from you, and go healthy for good. We'll be back after a short break, so stay there.
Glorify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. I sought the Lord and he answered me. He delivered me from all my fears. Those who look to him are radiant. Their faces are never covered with shame. This poor man called and the Lord heard him. He saved him out of all his troubles. The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him, and he delivers them.
Whatever you do, do it all in the name of the Lord.
Welcome back to Go Healthy for Good. We're taking more of your health questions, especially related to psoriasis. So call us on 855-400-HEALTHY. That's 855-400-4325. So call us now. But let's take a look at this clip, and then we're going to take some calls.
Psoriasis really opened up my eyes to, you know, my health condition in general, because I started watching what I was eating. I had to take vitamins all the time, and I was worrying about my skin, you know, so I really just started caring about my overall health. And then it started making me really self-conscious for a long time, because, you know, I was embarrassed and I didn't want to talk about it, or I didn't, you know, want anybody to see it or know what it was. So the worst part about having psoriasis is just having to deal with it every day. You know, you wake up, you have psoriasis, and then throughout the day you're reminded constantly, I have psoriasis. And then at the end of the day, it's, you know, if I have to put on my medicine and I still have psoriasis, you know, it's always there. No matter what I'm doing, it affects things. So it's just one thing, but it changes everything.
Now we have a caller on the line, Catherine from Florida. Catherine, welcome to Go Healthy. What's your question for us today?
Thank you for taking my call. I have psoriasis in my hair, and you can't use a Vaseline-based something to use on your scalp. It's just too sticky for in your hair. What, have you any suggestions of what I could use?
Okay. Nadia, what would you recommend for psoriasis in the hair?
Again, vitamin D. Vitamin D systemically in high doses, approximately 5,000 IU per day, and also the vitamin D cream, which is, the problem with it is it's a little bit expensive, but it does very well on the scalp to reduce those lesions.
All right, Larry, what would you use?
Well, I would use, for things that are over the counter available without a prescription, things we sort of talked about before. They make coal tar shampoos and salicylic acid shampoos. So I'd use them one day one and one day the next. So you have the salicylic acid shampoo to help scrub out in the scales and the coal tar to help reduce the psoriasis. Now, that said, if you have severe psoriasis in your scalp or bad psoriasis in the scalp, it sounds like this caller does, it's important to see your dermatologist because she or he has many prescription medicines that can help as well. Some of them being actually, you know, the Catherine mentioned something occlusive. We have these oils with cortisone in them that can go in the scalp and they sit overnight, and you can put on a shower cap to help make it sink in, sort of like that Saran wrap we talked about.
Right.
So sort of the same ideas. And those actually work very, very well. And if she has more questions, you know, I can refer her to the National Psoriasis Foundation website, because any caller who has questions about psoriasis, psoriasis.org is the web address of the National Psoriasis Foundation, and all these questions can be answered there. They have blogs if you have questions that aren't, you don't find there, and they'll get back to you. It's a wonderful resource for anyone with psoriasis.
Fabulous. And there's also a phone number they can call on that website?
Yes, there's a phone number they can call, directly talk to someone, and someone will speak with you and answer your questions that way as well.
That's wonderful. Okay, now let's talk about some dietary options. We you mentioned the gluten and the casein. So what do you recommend for your patients with psoriasis, Nadia?
I usually test them to determine whether they are gluten and casein intolerant, either one or the other or both. And if they are, the gluten-free diet and casein-free diet, which means dairy-free diet, usually is started. So that's the main dietary approach.
Right. Any other dietary recommendations you make for these?
Essential fatty acids increased in the diet, like those that come from fish or from flaxseed oil. Those are helpful.
So increase the omega-3s. Okay.
A lot of green leafy vegetables, they're rich in folic acid, which just helps with the cell regeneration and cell turnover process.
Right. Do you make any dietary recommendations or lifestyle recommendations for your patients with psoriasis?
That's a good question. And Nadia brought up some good answers to that question as well. But I sort of usually generalize for my patients in terms of diet. Please have a healthy, well-balanced diet. Because bottom line is psoriasis inflammation is built up in the body. You want to do what you can to reduce inflammation in the body. Eating healthy is an important first step to making your body more at peace. So eating healthy, having a healthy lifestyle, exercising regularly, those are all very important to help someone, not just with psoriasis, but any autoimmune condition, to help reduce the immune burden that's going on in the body.
Right. And as you brought out, the metabolic syndrome, the diabetes, the psoriasis patients are heavier. Yeah. So That's all really great advice. I want to thank you both for being here today. It's been great having you on the show.
Well, it's been a pleasure and an honor.
And I hope people have benefited from all the good advice that you've given us. So thank you. You know, psoriasis can be difficult to live with, but there's always hope. Begin to experiment with foods or other environmental triggers. And while you work on that, there are so many options for treatment that you've heard about this evening. Remember that an overactive immune system can respond very well when you make healthy lifestyle choices. One more thing. Beauty's more than skin deep, so don't give up. You're still valuable and beautiful, because beauty begins on the inside. Thanks for joining us on Go Healthy for Good. We'll see you next time.